Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club with your host and moderator, Charles Williams, and I'm joined by my lovely wife, Jalavette on the Wheels of Steel. Say hello, Jalavette.
Hello, Jalavette.
All right. How you doing tonight?
Doing good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing better. Well, you know, we're doing what we've been doing for the past several weeks. We're doing the falsification of African consciousness. Subtitled Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy by Amos N. Williams, Ph.D. And we're in lecture, part two of the lecture series, titled Eurocentric Political Dogmatism, Its Relationship to the Mental Health Diagnosis of African People. Last week, we finished up with Procedural Liberties and Personal Restraints on page 77, and this week we will begin with the section on compensation on page 83.
All right. Well, let's just dig in, I guess.
Right on. That's where we are. And, you know, it's been quick, hasn't it?
It has. But, you know, it's a short book and I think kind of a quick read. These are actually transcribed lectures, right?
Yes, yes. They actually have a question and answer portion in at the end of, I know, part one and part three and whatnot. Yeah, so this is an actual lecture that he gave. I think he gave it to his students,
mm-hmm.
to the professor of psychology at City University of New York.
Mm-hmm.
So he may have given this as a special lecture, not, you know, in class per se, but, you know, doing special presentations that he often gave.
Mm-hmm.
Like he did one on black-on-black violence, black-on-black male adolescent violence. That was another lecture, and he did one on the New World Order versus Garveyism, or Garveyism versus New World Order. I forget the title.
The black male-female relationship?
Yes, yes. I think that lecture he gave, the one we saw, he probably gave it at the university as well,
mm-hmm.
that we saw was given at the Slave Theater. No, he probably was given it. I thought he was given it at the Slave Theater at Best Eye.
I'm not sure.
That's when that one was given, from the looks of the building and the room. I'm familiar with seeing it so many times.
Aside from this compilation of lectures, I think that's my most favorite.
Oh, yeah. I think it's your most favorite of the favorite ones.
Yes, that's favorite of my favorites after this favorite that we're doing right now, The Falsification of African Consciousness.
Yes. As I read the other one, I do need to read it again because we probably do it on this program.
You think so?
Yeah, we'll do Black on Black Man, Alice and Violence. Man, if we do the whole Amos Wilson lecture series, we won't do the books, we just do the lecture series. What I probably do is I'm thinking about doing certain chapters from the developmental psychology of the black child.
Oh, yeah. Now, that would be interesting.
Because the whole book, I don't think, would be interesting to a lot of people, but certain chapters.
Right. It wouldn't translate. It's too technical.
Yeah. Like, it's a chapter on, it's called Psychogenic Brain Damage.
Uh-huh.
Like just showing how our socialization damages the brains of our people.
Uh-huh. And he has a lot of diagrams and stuff.
Yeah, but that chapter doesn't have that. I mean, so many, but it could help give people a good understanding of how we get, how the frontal lobe is damaged.
Mm-hmm.
In the African American brain from experiencing oppression and white supremacy, racism, you know, because a lot of people want to pretend like, you know, oh, it's not that bad, I'm okay, and, you know, no, you're not okay.
Right, and you're actually given a frontal lobotomy with programming, trauma, food, water, various ways.
Right, we're given a frontal lobotomy just by being a Negro in America.
America, that's a hell of a thing.
Anyway, pretend like it's okay. We love you, not really.
That kind of sounds like a read a little.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. That's what they're doing, and so I never did set that poll up. I forgot to set it up on BIP, but I'm gonna do that poll just so we can, you know, get those people who love their lobotomy.
We have somebody asking about the sound in the chat room, so I need to know if
you refresh the page. Try that.
If you refresh the page, please, and let me know if we're broadcasting, because you know, we had that problem before. Remember that time?
My mic is not muted.
Well, no, but you remember that time that we did, like, an entire show? And then, the mics were not muted. It just did not take.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
So.
Yeah, let us know.
If anybody that's called in on the line, if you can hear us, can you just press 1 to let us know that we're broadcasting, and then just press 1 again to go out of the queue to let us know that you can hear us? Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. So we're going out live. Okay. So in the chat room, you have to just reload and then you can hear us. Reload. She can't hear that. Let me just type that. Duh. All right. And there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I can't fall because I'm sitting there going like, yeah, that's right.
Rick does. You can't hear.
It's like, yeah, that is true. That's...
All right, let's go. Oh, Brother Mean is on the line. Sorry, forgot.
It's all right. He waiting on the showdown.
Okay, waiting on the showdown. He just popped in. Welcome, hey, Brother Mean.
Yeah.
Hey, how you guys feeling? This is fantastic.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, we're doing great. And you?
Spectacular.
Look at you.
We're learning about, we were just discussing how great white supremacy is and how it gives us all from lobotomies.
Yes. Amos Wilson talks about it in his book,
Developmental Psychology of the Black.
Mm-hmm.
Remember psychodeprivation chapter entitled Psychogenic Brain Damage.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you actually, no, it's not a joke. Actually, the
I'm just laughing because white supremacy is so great.
Exactly what Charles just said. For all of you that think that white supremacy is just not that bad, you get just a free frontal lobotomy just for being here.
That's right. They gave us this wonderful internship and a free lobotomy for all.
Isn't that sweet? That is something.
How can we possibly repay them besides thousands of years of servitude?
Hey, this is the part that's supposed to come at the end.
Yes.
We're not supposed to start off with bitter moments, okay?
Okay. Okay.
All right, so let's play nice. This is not the bitter hour.
Yeah, it's bitter. Right. Well, we won't have that tonight because tonight's going to be, how long is this program going to be?
As long as you want. As long as you want.
Well, all right.
3 hours.
All right, let's go. Oh, not 2 hours again. Come on.
We're not going to do that.
We're not going to do that.
That was a fluke. But we made it back to the normal human.
You know, a normal human book club meeting.
Right.
Okay, people.
Everybody, we know you've gone out to purchase your copies of this text, The Falsification of African Consciousness, by Amos N. Wilson, native Hattiesburg, Mississippi. I know y'all got this book. Are y'all not just thinking I'm reading this whole book? Because I'm not. This is not the whole book. It's a whole lot more good stuff in here that I'm not reading on air. And the people who are not going to buy this book will say, you know what, this is good enough. What you read it, I can go a long way on that. And that may be true. That's true. It's more than what you had. And so, but buy the book. Support the publishing company, Amos. That's Amos Wilson's own publishing company. And so, you know, the books can continue to come to another generation, and hopefully you give a damn about future generations of black readers.
All right. Let's digress from Bitter Hour.
Bitter Hour. Oh, yeah. Bitter Hour's at the end. Thank you for keeping us focused.
Thank you. Okay.
I'm so loving and long-suffering with our new members in the audience.
Just the typical angry black man. Let's go. I'm reading the book.
I'm starting. I'm doing it right now.
Okay.
As we're speaking.
Okay. Come on.
Watch. Just keep it. Watch. It's coming. There you go. It's all right now.
I'm not going to let you do that again. Come on.
Yes, I'm doing it right now. So these are the contradictions in the system, educational system, that makes us dumb, that teach us how not to think, welfare system that keeps us poor, foreign aid that keep our African nations in states of poverty, religious establishments which are going to send us all to hell, egalitarian constitution that maintains inequality. In this system, I'm sorry, it is this system that is projected into and interpreted in the black minds of black parents and black people, that is also projected into the socioeconomic structure and thereby creates attitudes, negative self-perceptions, and frustrations. It is a kind of system that breeds mental problems, problems of criminality, and other kinds of problems that are duly diagnosed by psychologists and sociologists and social workers, that are duly treated by those who are helping professionals, who ultimately end up helping themselves to us rather than helping us. As a matter of fact, We could see those professions as part of the system itself.
Mm-hmm.
Take a pause right here and just discuss. We can just discuss my paragraph. Would you like that better?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there you go. Now, we talked about these so-called helping professions. Well, and after we've never talked about it on air. Oh, yeah, on the Woman's Own Community Experience we have.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about eugenics. And these so-called helping professions, the social workers, the nowadays, and the psychologists, they were all a part of the, at least, let's say, born to help us out of the eugenics movement. And these, you know, so these social workers and psychologists want to help themselves to us, just as Dr. Wilson stated. However, he's not going on into, you know, their 100-year history of planning on how they're going, you know, what they're going to destroy us, how they inbred themselves and found out they made themselves retarded by believing that their bloodline was going to be so pure they can only interbreed until their family tree became totally vertical. So, you know, with no branches at all. You know, that's so we, he didn't cover that. Anything you'd like to say about that, that paragraph? Are that part of that? No?
No. I will say, like you said, we've talked about it before, these helping agencies, and I think that that's a sore spot in our community, because when you get to talking about these helping agencies and looking to the government for our sustenance, it steps on a lot of toes. And it is a fine line, because you can say, well, we go to the government. Some will say, go and get whatever you can. And then others will say, but don't go and let that be your, you know, sole source of, you know, of how you take care of yourself.
It's more about the attitude.
Right. And so it's funny because, you know, a lot of us get aid, and some of it, you know, some people will call that reparations. Others will say, you know, look down upon you for having received, you know, those types of assistance and so on and so forth. And so that's really a sore spot. But the issue is that the start of many of these programs were never in our best interest. Now, if we at this time have managed to in some way parlay those into positive contributions for our communities, well, you know, great. But the history cannot be rewritten. The truth is that, you know, Planned Parenthood is a eugenics program. You know, the welfare system's purpose was to empower the woman and to disempower the black male, and thereby, you know, further destabilize the black family. You know, and there are others. I could go on and on, but, you know,
right.
That is a sore spot for many in our community.
Our people don't know how to use the weapons that were formed against us into our own weapons against those who plan to use them. You know what I'm saying? We use them to ensnare the enemy.
That's right.
And a lot of people, like, they'll say, oh, well, you shouldn't do that. You know, anybody who tells you you shouldn't take advantage of any weapon that your enemy wields against you and use it to your benefit, that person is the enemy.
There you go.
They working for the other thing. They need to get on the other side of the battlefield. Oh, they need to go. They need to go over there.
You
gotta call them out on it. You gotta stop letting them people slide. Or,
you know, I'm personally insulted. I'm personally insulted because, you know, I worked in a mental health field in a helping agency, and I'm so offended by this. But you know, our system is founded on what they call Elizabethan poor laws, and those laws were originally established to give the poor just enough to keep them from trying to overthrow the government. This thing dates back several hundred years, but it's founded in that same system. The system still works in the same way. It's really just that they call it a safety net, but it's really just a net to make sure that that you have just enough to keep you from fighting.
Yeah, just to lull you back to sleep. Not just keep you just enough that you won't get that mad enough to do nothing. Right when you think you're going to get out the chair, you're like, oh, I forgot I did get that. Oh,
a check came, good.
Ooh. Let me go through.
I was getting mad there for a minute.
I was about to do something. Woo, they better be glad I can go find some juice in the science.
You have a caller in 646. 646, you live? Hello? 646? Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, so that's what they do. You know, they try to... We should use all these things that they put, traps that they put in our path, and use them to our benefit. You know, and we should, even people who claim to be on our team, we may not have the privilege of just throwing them out at this stage because we're such a weakened state. But we have to, you know, pretend that we don't know that they're the enemy. But you, most important, that you realize that they're the enemy when they speak like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know people who are physically close to us, you know, and they speak favorably of, I'm going to say they speak out of both sides of their mouth regarding our condition. You know, one hand is, oh, it's so wrong, they did this and this thing. It's, well, you know, we all got to, we in this together with, you know, and so we got to work with the European to help us all make a better life.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they speak in double forked tongue it like that, you know, I may not have that power to say, hey, get the hell out from where I'm in or whatever. I mean, I can do it, but, you know, it ain't that advantageous. It's more advantageous for me to pretend like I didn't know how serious that person is as a threat and just, you know, and just let them think that they're accomplishing their objectives, you know? That's the worst thing you can do to an enemy is have him to believe he's more successful than he actually is. That's called deception. You must deceive the adversary. That's the whole part of war, deception.
Mm-hmm.
But this ain't the military science show now, is it?
No, it is not.
We never did one. Did one for that group. But anyway, here we go. Second paragraph of this. Here we go. And the third one's going to be one of my favorite parts. It'll be reminiscent of last week. Our responses to these contradictions include problems with identity. Some of us respond through overcompensation. Those of us who are going to prove to the white folk that we are the greatest in the world. Mm-hmm. We see some people succeed as a result of failing. The success is often based on failure. A success can be a type of failure. This is one reason why often success does not bring the kind of personal satisfaction and peace that many people seek, and why often the individual, despite all the material evidences of having succeeded, still feels psychologically cheated because one can achieve for the wrong reason. So when we achieve to prove to somebody else, to show the white folk that we can do it, as good as they can do it, it is success that still is guaranteed to make us sick. It is motivated by the wrong reason. We must get caught up in succeeding as a total way of life. We then must get caught up in fearing failure and therefore become obsessive and compulsive. We must have a feeling of pressure, a feeling of imminent disaster is pursuing us at all times. Therefore, success becomes a burden, and often we have to drink, smoke, and do all the other unhealthy kinds of things in order to contend with it. We have the successful people coking just as much as the unsuccessful, because often they have succeeded and failed for the very same reason, and the very success and failure helps us maintain the status quo. Are we studying Egyptology or Kemetology to prove to white folk how great we were, and hope one day that when he acknowledges the Egyptians that the Egyptians were Africans, that he will have, he will accept us as human beings? Is our study of Egyptology a personal and collective defense mechanism, a means of dealing with our hurt pride, as a means of trying to slip into the acceptance of white people by the back door? Is our hang-up with history and exaggeration and of certain of our achievements means by which we try to salvage a damaged ego? This is the ache of inferiority that never goes away. And we study, and we study, and we read, and we read, and we learn the hieroglyphics, and we still feel inferior because we are pushed by the wrong reasons. And when we are motivated by the wrong reasons, even though we may replace the people who rule over us, we will end up being just like them.
Yeah.
There you go. Anybody have anything to say about that section right there?
I got a lot to say about that.
Other than correct? I don't know.
Yeah, ditto, doc.
Right on.
I was talking with someone about that this morning. You know when you get on Facebook, I notice there's when I look back at my life, I was in that same situation he talks about. I found myself at some point the white picket fence. My two cars were parked out front, and the more I gained, and the more success I had, the more of a failure I realized I was. It sounds weird to people, but you really start to realize that your whole life is, I'm going to prove this. I'm going to show this. I couldn't wait to get my degree. I couldn't wait to do all of these things. But it was all, when you look at it, the success and the failure are simultaneous. They're existing, at the same time. The success and failure. I felt this crushing failure at the same time I was having supposed success, because I was nothing but a contributor to the system. The success has to be in the service of your own people and not in the service of white supremacy, as the book is, as all of his books talk about. You know, you're always constantly in the service of them, and so the more I became what I, you know, called Charlie approved.
Right.
And I had to step back away from that. Yeah, but people often think, what I noticed, the discussion I had this morning was about, you find with a lot of people on Facebook, a lot of these folks who are pro-black, they wouldn't be pro-black if there was a $10,000 raise.
Right.
Added on. You know, their success is, their objection to the system is mostly because of their failure in the system. A lot of us didn't fail, and I think some of us among our group were not failures in the system. We were successful in the system, which actually drew us to this point,
mm-hmm.
where we were looking and seeing where the system is exploiting most of our folks. I was one person who was there exploiting my own people, so my success was in my exploitation of my own people. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't do anything for us. So you have this. That's why I think you have so many supposedly successful people committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking, smoking, doing this. At one point, I smoked two packs of cigarettes a day. You know, the more contracts I got, the more I smoked. You know, and that's not a life.
Right. Right. It's you know, it's like whether we become successful or we fail. Either way, we got to try to do something for our own people.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you went through success, you found emptiness. Well, you found emptiness. Well, when people find failure, how come they don't? Some people find failure and don't say, you know what, I'm gonna, you know, what am I failing at?
Mm-hmm.
What am I trying to succeed at that I'm not achieving? And then say, well, maybe I should stop trying to achieve that. Maybe I should set a different goal. And we see people not doing that. They'll say, I didn't succeed at becoming a celebrated Negro in the system of white supremacy. And since I didn't succeed in it, I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
I don't care about, they'll say, I don't, they will say, I want some taste out of kindness, but they'll say they don't care about black, the black condition. You know, since if they can't have anything, they'd rather have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They're not going to just strive for something else.
Yeah.
You can just set new goals.
Yeah, do the same thing you were doing in the service of your own people.
Right, you can say, yeah, because I was trying to get this thing so I could, you know, get that white picket fence and move out the hood. I think somebody made a statement you was working on, and they said black folks just want to live in the hood. What's wrong with living in the hood? And nothing wrong with living in the neighborhood. But see, in that person's mind who we were discussing, that person living amongst black people is failure.
Right.
Living amongst your own people is failure. Marrying your kinswomen, or a man marrying a black his people, a woman of his people, is failure. So that person is an assimilationist of white supremacy. He wants to totally divest himself of his blackness. That person usually looks forward to in a few years getting some skin bleaching treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Adopting white children and saying that these are my real biological kids, trying to pass them off like MJ. Not only I'm talking about Michael Jordan.
And you know, there was a time when I was had to hire people. I mean, and when I was in that state, I wouldn't even hire my own people. I hired mostly Hispanics, and it was because I didn't want to take the time to train my own people. But that's not helping by doing that. If I have to take the time to train them, I need to take the time to train them, which is what I ultimately changed my way and started to do. But,
right.
But some people, you know, same way you said, they well, if I got to do that, I won't do anything.
Right.
You know, it's not good.
And so many of us, right, they'd rather just go into depression instead of getting, you know, everybody's depressed. Get into a deeper depression from not having accomplished those certain goals and say, you know, nothing, forget it. You know, I don't care. I'm not going to stop. I ain't trying to help black folks. Screw black people. That's about me. And that's an ego-centered way of thinking. He discusses in the Developmental Psychology of Black Child in a great detail. He discussed it in this book, too, but he discussed in that book how it is formed, how it's created. And we're going to cover that on this. We're going to do that book. Not the whole book, but we'll cover those chapters. How that ego-centered Negro, African-American is created, that only cares about himself, doesn't care about his relatives, maybe his immediate relatives, that's it. And as long as they're in his good graces in that moment, and as soon as they have a beef about, you know, anything, no matter how petty or trivial, then, you know, they're on the crap list. And so that's the problem we are going to address with regard to the black psychological makeup. Now, in the second part, we didn't get to this. It's about this fascination certain segments of our society have with Egypt. And to be a little even-handed, no, I'm not going to talk about nobody else, no other groups. I could talk about other groups that have the same kind of imagination, but this particular group here, fascination with Egypt, are I would say more the most arrogant. You know, they believe that by knowing some information about Egypt makes them better than other people. And in our previous episode, we were visited by one of the people who had this view of immense superiority to the rest of his kinspeople, and believed that it gave him some kind of, Dr. Wilson says, personal and collective defense and means of dealing with his hurt pride. And that's why I just mentioned that they were arrogant about whatever it was they had learned, and so they feel like by learning certain details, even though it may not be a complete holistic view of what Egypt was in harmony with its regional, you know, cultural surroundings, that whatever it is they learned gave them they feel they've restored their pride. And the hope of their restoration of their pride, you know, brought them back, in my opinion. It didn't heal them. It didn't heal them of the psychological damage of living in white supremacist fascist state. It just merely, you know, put a Band-Aid on that festering sore that soon, you know, it was going to need some serious medical attention, in which we can see within that subculture, African American society is still in need of that kind of attention to deal with that and trying to overcome the acceptance with the European, because the European has celebrated Egypt as the greatest civilization in the world, and then when these people, and when Sheikh Anna Diop closed the case in 1974 at a UNESCO conference that the Egyptians were in fact black. So all these people, they didn't go out and buy his books. Okay? Sheikh Anna Diop's books aren't flying off the shelf. The people I talked to haven't digested his book on Egypt. They hadn't read all this stuff. You see? But by the fact that them knowing about the model airplane and the tomb of Saqqara, knowing about the temple at Waset and later named Karnak or whatever, you know, by the fact knowing that, I'm better than you. Or somebody who learns Hebrew Aramaic can maybe feel that same level of pride, which I've seen it in my own community, but not to that degree, perhaps, that we experienced in our previous broadcast. Anybody else have anything to say about Dr. Wilson's view on people and their study of Egypt?
I know he also said if there's nothing wrong with it, just build a pyramid. If you're not building, if you have this knowledge, use it to move ahead, you know. I just like you said, I think there's a lot of ego stroking with that going on.
Yeah, he says he says we feel, are we being pushed by the wrong reasons? And when we are motivated by the wrong reasons, and though we may replace the people who rule over us, we'll still end up being like them. But in this section, he didn't really get it. He did deal with it last week's broadcast. And he's probably going to deal with it again, because we read a section on that. Yeah, he said, we should learn that any kind of culture, technology related to black people, because, you know, people don't understand that black folks started every major civilization in antiquity. Every one of them, pick one. You know, these people act like you got to know this one here in particular, and any other is insignificant. You know, and this is the one to know. But the thing about we could resurrect cultural technology all over the planet if we spent our time learning cultural technology, learning what did our ancient ancestors know at the dawn of time. How did they route rivers? How did they do irrigation? How did they build great buildings in Babylon out of man-made brick? Not out of stone, but they built straw and mud, and they built great ziggurats. These are pyramids. The oldest pyramid. They built them out of brick, and they didn't quarry stone. So it's amazing things that we did, and we could learn it. We could resurrect all the mathematics, the physics, the engineering, what we call today chemistry, with alchem, which is the black. Chemistry really means black. I mean, we can go all into it. And Kim's actually Canaanite. You know, they won't say, oh, Kemet. You know what, Kemet ain't Coptic. You know, it's an old Canaanite word. Like ham, it's the same spelling. You know, so it means black. Like, and that's not the only land called Kem. There's part of the land of Canaan also called Kem too. But they don't know that. That's all right. I do.
Yeah.
Strength and man didn't tell him that part. We need to enroll at the African Knowledge Institute of Higher Learning. Need to go on and pay their tuition. All right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Sounds like I can hear a mouse pissing on cotton.
Oh.
On Christmas Day.
And now I gotta edit that outburst.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, man.
Here we go. Our succeeding for the wrong reason sets our mind up for being inculcated. Ooh, that's somebody's word. Inculcated and possessed by the very devil we fight against. Do I need to repeat that again?
Yes.
Our succeeding for the wrong reason sets our mind up for being inculcated and possessed by the very devil we fight against. And therefore, another revolution will have to be fought. And it will have to be fought against us. Did he just say?
Say it again.
He said, therefore, another revolution will have to be fought. And it will have to be fought against us. In other words, black folks mainly going to have to fight against black folks. Because black folks, Amin was working on the book. You worked on the term hegemony, right?
Mm-hmm.
And hegemony is when the cultural values of the ruling class is inculcated into a subordinate class or caste, however you want to put it. And when those values are imparted in them, they protect the cultural values of the ruling elite. Now, in order to get, if you want to have a radical change in social order, you're going to have to destroy the hegemony, which is why Dr. Wilson says the revolution will have to be fought against us. Mm. Basically, going to have civil war. Mm-hmm. Not the kind of civil war that destroys the kind of civil war that builds, that roots out all of the people who are tying your hands and stabbing you in the back. It's that kind. We call it house cleaning in our old episodes. You got to clean house. And upon the cleaning of your home, then you can start being able to function and establish the kind of social order that you need, because you got these distracting elements in your society, you can't do nothing against, you know, you can't advance and expand beyond your home. Because your home ain't even secure, because your neighbors is constantly making attacks. And it's hard to know which one is friends or foes, because they all look just like you. And so we'll have to be able to distinguish. And the fighting I'm talking about is being able to classify, distinguish, alienate, and reward, and punish. Befriend and alienate, reward, and punish. You got to be able to, we have to have clear vision to be able to do that. And we have to have an empirical means of determining how to do it effectively, with precision and high level of accuracy. That means that we have to get on our ball. Get on our case. Get the game moving forward.
Get a white van.
With a white van with a big air conditioner unit hanging out the back.
Mm-hmm.
And have Joe's Plumbing on the side.
Or listening device, whichever.
Whatever. But here we go. He says, consequently, it is not enough to succeed in the society or to fail. Some people succeed at failing. The white man tells us we know good, and we work very hard showing him he's right. Yes, we find the parallel situation in many parent-child situations. Quote, unquote, you will never be nothing, end quote. And the child shows them with a vengeance how it will be nothing. He quotes, I am going to make you see, mama. every day that I'm doing, that I'm nothing, and I'm going to flaunt my nothingness in your face, and I'm going to make you cry every night, and I'm going to make you go to the jail and try to get me out, end quote. See, because you told me I was just like my daddy, no good, going nowhere, or else you would do it the other way. He's quote, I'm going to show you how good I am, end quote. And he succeeds. He succeeds in an emptiness in his heart and in his mind. Our victory leaves a taste of ashes in our mouth. We wonder where the happiness went. And we say, is it all? Is this all there is to it? Nothing hurts like failing unless it is success. Many of us found out when we broke into white, midstream America that there is just as much hell in there as there was where we were to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody got any thoughts on that? On those poor parenting lessons that people give? Thank goodness I didn't have the displeasure of having been verbally assaulted by someone, an authority figure, by that kind of rhetoric. Anybody else?
Well, you know, we moved a long distance between the 70s and now. You know, as far as our people, we moved ahead quite a bit towards success, and now all of our children have their pants hanging down.
Yep.
So that's pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, we're almost successful. We got a lot. Yeah, you know, we boast about how much money we make, and then our pants are falling down.
You know, none of our elders raised them that way.
Yeah, they always say that.
And never raised them that way.
But, so, okay, they raised the children that raised those children. So they're only one generation removed at best. What were they teaching again? What were their lessons?
Well, you know what? My generation, they spent their time, you know, chasing money and at the office with their pants pulled down, and now their kids are chasing money with their pants pulled down. So it's pretty much...
Imagine that.
Yeah, the black yuppies of the 80s and the 90s, early 90s, you know, they...
Wilson say they're going to step out those pants.
Put on a dress, that's right, she sure did.
Step right into a dress. Need to take a break, Charles.
Okay, and they're already doing that because now they got all kinds of undergarments too to help them.
Oh God,
to help them, you know, to just be more happy.
The mantyhose.
Mantyhose.
Right under my skinny jeans.
For the schman.
The schman. That is terrible. It's so funny that I'm not even going to laugh at that.
Yeah.
I really want to so badly.
Man.
The schmack. Damn it. Please take a break.
Okay. We'll be right back after a few brief messages. We're going to return with we're in the same session, talking about compensation with reading Dr. Amos and Wilson's Falsification of African Consciousness. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Listen in to African Conversations on the African Knowledge Network, where we will converse with researchers about matters significant to the African diaspora community. Join us on Facebook on the African Conversations community page. Enjoy the dialogue on African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
Listen to Love in Black with Charles and Jolivet on the Tribal Family Station on blogtalkradio.com.
There we will share our experiences and our insights on marriage and love, sex, respect, and honor. We're on every Thursday evening on the Tribal Family Station.
My name is Eric Tiemer, host of Common Sense Conversations. Join me every Tuesday and Friday when I put common sense where it ain't so common. That's Common Sense Conversations every Tuesday and Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Pacific. Common Sense Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
Join the Woman's Song Community Experience every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com. We will do the thing that many think cannot be done.
African Knowledge Beyond the Book appears every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are a literary society dedicated to the study of African-based psychoanalytical texts. We hope you will join us as we delve into the inner working of our African consciousness. African Knowledge Beyond the Book, every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to AfricanImpressions.com. African Impressions is a black-owned business that offers products made by the global African community. African Impressions offers the finest in African-made jewelry, craft, clothing, and so much more. As the renaissance of the African community rapidly approaches, you need to add acquiring products crafted by members of the global African family to your repertoire of activities. We must rediscover more of our ancient cultural habits, which we struggle to regain, and incorporate them into our daily lives. Support African craftsmen and women by shopping at AfricanImpressions.com today. Hope to see you there.
Welcome back from my break. We're still reviewing our Falsification of African Consciousness by Dr. Amos N. Wilson, and we're on page 85, and the section of this lecture is on compensation. We'll just begin here at the third paragraph on page 85. You can follow along in your text because I'm sure you have a copy. He says, we have to recognize then that it is not a matter of making it in the system, but a matter of questioning the system itself. It is not just a matter of equality within the system, but very critical looking at the system in and of itself. So many of us, in responding to the contradictions projected by the system, react with rage, apathy, stereotypy, paranoia, suspiciousness,
and depression and mania and even bourgeoisie nationalism. Oh, yes, we have some bourgeoisie nationalists here. It is not only the ruling class whites that seek to perceive the condition of our people as a result of the moral failings of our people or some moral deficiency. We have to be careful and make sure that we don't, that we as a, also as a people do not see ourselves that way. Yes, and we as black nationalists, well fed with jobs, have to be very careful when we think the only thing our less fortunate brothers need is a lesson in Egyptian history and a lesson in black history and a lesson in morality, and voila! What when all the black people find out that they were great Egyptians and great Ghanaians, oh, what a great dream would have come true. Then we will find out that we will be pretty much the same condition as we were before. What we are fighting against, as Paul in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12 said in the Bible, are principalities against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. End quote. Against a real power, it, not just a mindset, but against real flesh and blood people who are in control of the world's economic system and social system and military system. Mere knowledge, morality, values, though of great importance, are not going to be enough to extricate us from the situation that we are in. That's the end of that section on compensation on page 86. Anybody have any thoughts they'd like to share on that?
Yeah, well, I would agree.
Really?
We talk about a lot of things. Well, we see a lot of things that our folks talk about that aren't relevant to really overthrowing this power that's against us. These people have an entire infrastructure set up to just crush us and wipe us off the face of the earth. You know, but folks seem to think knowledge and morality or what have you is gonna get us out of this situation. Yeah, we got a long way to go before that'll ever happen. You know, these things are important, but they have an entire infrastructure to crush us when they need to.
Yeah, he says mere knowledge, morality, values of great importance are not enough to extricate us from the situation. Right, we have to give a not only have basically saying you got to have the. You got to know, you know, you got to know your history and all that good stuff. Yeah, it's all good. You need that. But you got to, by quoting Shaul's or Paulos' letter to the congregation at Ephesus, he's basically saying you got to understand on the spiritual dimension. Machiavelli discusses it in his book, The Prince. Anybody want to go to the Great Courses? The Great Courses is a online. It's like a free, not a free. I'm sorry, I get them in the library, so they're free for me. But you can go to your library, you can get these courses on DVD. And there's a lecture by a university professor on Machiavelli in context. And he talks about Machiavelli. I took that course anyway, and Machiavelli talked about you must be able to discern spiritual things. Now, we know that the Bible says that's what Paulus, this is why Amos Wilson is quoting Paulus. I'm bringing that into context because some people in the audience would be like, why is he quoting Ephesians? What does that have to do with anything? He's telling you what it has to do. Actually, his commentary explains itself. He's explaining himself, and he's commenting on the letter of Ephesians at the same time. That's what I was saying the other week, that black folks don't know how to read because they'll read that section and they'll be totally lost. The point is, yes, you must have the common sense type thinking that you know black folks don't have. In addition to that, you got to have the frontal lobe spiritual discernment thing that black folks don't have either, because it's being damaged, a part of our brain damage, by living under racism and white supremacy, which we're going to cover in another book called Developmental Psychology of the Black Child, also by Dr. Amos N. Wilson. You have to have spiritual insight as well as some regular common sense. And that has to be learned. We have to have a focus. So that means we have to try to succeed at the right kinds of things. That's what Dr. Wilson is saying. Your motivation, your reasons, why you want to succeed, what you going to do with the success. How are you going to respond to failure? What are your reasons for failure? Why are you failing? You know what I'm saying? By answering those questions and having some black-centered, hopefully in a positive direction, answers to them, you can try to succeed at the right things and be able to be a benefit, a blessing, if you will, to your community, to your society, instead of saying, I'm going to succeed at the expense of my community. And a lot of that we complain about, at least I do, complain about black people selling their souls, selling out. That's a part of the spiritual dimension of this conflict, by us compromising our self, our souls. The soul, the self, means the soul really means, or the nefesh, really means the whole of your being, every part of you, not just some metaphysical aspect of your being, but it's really your body, your will, your intellect, everything that is about you that makes you who you are, your peculiar manifestation of your people that you are, selling that, compromising that, instead of it being a benefit to the community which created you, to being a detriment, or being basically ambivalent, or even to no, of no value, of no use to this, to your society, which really desperately needs you to bring about its deliverance, or contribute to its deliverance, and that sort of thing. So that's the reason why Amos Wilson says what he says in this last paragraph. We must, and also when he deals with the black bourgeoisie nationalism, you know, some people think, well, you know, all you need is a good job. The reason why you know, he's not saying that really right there. He's saying those who have good jobs or whatever, and quote unquote good jobs, you know, may become a little bit more academically centered. I mean, they think that just having the morality and the education, knowing all these historical facts, it will be enough to bring about the social transformation that we see. And that's not realistic. That's what he's saying with regard to that. Does anybody else have anything to say about the black bourgeoisie nationalism or the system of inequality that creates all these contradictions?
Well, I wanted to say something. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to talk about, before he got to that point, you were saying something about people being able to use the whole of their being for the benefit of the community. And I think that somewhere along the line, we've lost that. Not only have we lost it, but we are now embracing full force the idea that we do not have an obligation or duty to our community. I think it's both he and Dr. Africa talk about how the children that are born in this society, the mother sees them as hers.
Yeah.
And for her exclusive benefit, for her to give her love, for her to love, for them to go out and amass whatever it is that they will do and be a reflection of her and so on and so forth. But in actuality, every child that you have belongs to the community in which you belong, and that society benefits to its forward movement, or to it also will reap the detriment, you see, because when that child is, you know, a hellion, he terrorizes not just you, but the community.
Right.
Everyone suffers. When those, you know, you remember when we were in school, those badass kids would come and disrupt class. They would, you know, they would cause other people to act out with them. So, you know, everybody is affected. The every child, every person,
by the poor parenting,
is affected, and then he grows up, and then he terrorizes and robs and so on and so forth. But the point is that the idea of you know, that polarity or singular mindedness, the I generation that we have, you know, just kind of, we're not just dancing on the edge anymore. We've walked in and sat down and taken a seat and have gotten comfortable with the idea of, you know, dissociating ourselves from each other you know, seeing the benefit of our contribution, and not only just out of some charity, but out of duty and obligation.
You're right. I like, and to support your what your case here. The European knows this.
Oh yeah.
And the black, I think, knows it too. But they see their children not as a benefit to black people, but they'll use their own children as a benefit to white people, white society.
Mm-hmm.
My cases is my shining example is always the draft and or prison. You're like, you talking about the draft, prison? Yes, right, I said it. The draft and prison. Why? Because they say that the male child, once he reaches 18 years of age, he is to register for selective service. Why is he registered for selective service? Because the society wants to train these males to be accessible for compulsory military service.
Mm-hmm.
For the benefit of the white supremacist community.
Right.
That's what your child is in that case. And I'm saying they're using your child for their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
They believe that they have a right to enlist your male children, young men and women, into their kind of military service, but that they think it's their right to do so. Because
and
they know that the children belong to the culture, society, and everybody belongs to and should contribute toward it. However,
we believe that too, Charles.
Yeah, we believe it to their society, but I'm saying they're doing it for their benefit, but we do it to our detriment.
Right, but you were saying that they believe that they have a right. And I'm saying that we believe it, too.
Oh, yeah, we believe that they have a right to us, too. Yeah, right.
A right to our children, too. Why, of course they do.
Right. And my example of prison, to support your case, is the child, what does the male do? Pays his debt to society. No black person owe no debt.
Not a damn thing.
You don't owe nothing to white society. If you can burn down 100 buildings a year, you don't owe no goddamn, no, I'm sorry, no a debt to the white supremacist slave masters. No, you don't.
Now, don't you say it ain't easy quite that story.
I didn't say that. I said, hey, if was a fifth, we would all be fooled.
Oh, you went back.
Yes, I did. So you know ain't no one Negro or two or ten going to burn down 100 buildings.
Mm-mm.
That was going to happen. That's called hyperbole. Hyperbole. Okay. So the case is, they say, and what do black mothers do when the child or when the man or whatever, young man, he's on the run? They say you need to turn yourself in, baby. I don't want to see you like this on the road. Go on over to that rape city they got for you that they call prison. So I don't know where you are. You know what I'm saying? That's what they do. So the parents are saying that they believe that you should pay this social debt. They believe you should go on. They believe that the European has a right to capture you into deeper captivity, because you're already in captivity just being here under the circumstances, but you should go deep into the belly of the beast and experience more horrors, greater than the horrors that you have known personally, individually, on the ego level. And our families are supportive of both. Experience the horrors of military service or experience the horrors of mass incarceration. And we do not support using our lifeblood, our life force, for the benefit, exclusive benefit, of people of African descent. And that's a major paradigmatic shift in conscious transforming means that must be dealt with if we are to make any kind of progress on any kind of massive level. That kind of thinking must be put to the forefront as being unacceptable means of dealing with our society. There you go.
Yeah.
Anybody else got something on that?
No, you talk about selective service, and what do they do when you don't sign up? You can't get financial aid for school.
Yeah,
I thought that was funny that they tie that to that. Well, if you stay out and you can't even go to college without help, you know. Well, you know, we really don't need their help. We need to find ways to do that without their help.
Right. We need to have our own scholarship fund. Unfortunately, United Negro College Fund doesn't grant scholarships to Negroes that we know.
None that I know.
Never met one.
And so, there's some Negroes obviously getting them. We just don't know who they are.
Well, I don't know how obvious that is.
Well, it's obvious by its absence.
The evidence of absence.
Absence of evidence. It's not the absence of evidence.
Right. Absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence.
Yeah. So the fact that I don't know nobody getting a scholarship means that nobody I know is getting one. Not that no one is getting one.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's getting one,
I imagine.
There you go. Message. Now, the last paragraph. This is the last paragraph on this, and we'll
call it a night.
Yeah, we'll call it a night.
Okay.
You know what? We'll stop right there because that's the end of that particular section of lecture, and the next section is really long, and I don't even get that one cranked up.
Okay.
And so we're gonna call it an evening.
Woohoo! We're getting out of church early.
Sure are. Tough time to get home and
let's pass that plate one more time.
One more time. Hold on. One more time.
And fun.
You know, we got to build that building, Pastor.
That building's coming one day.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so funny. I'm going to tell y'all something real quick. This doesn't have anything to do with anything we're talking about.
Oh, okay. This is going to be really funny.
Except I remember. Yeah, this is a bitter hour. This is testimony time. When I was growing up, I promise for God, we had a building fund. From the time that I remember, listen, at this church that I used to go to, when I could even know what a building fund was and that it had a special envelope that had building fund on it, and you would put money in there or whatever for the building. And that, I mean, I could say that was probably, I was 8 or 10 or something. Do you know they're still in that same building?
Maybe it was for maintenance of the building. Part of that right then. But they never said that.
But they had a thing, like, on the wall, putting how much money, you know, a graduated, you know, scale thing of how much money had been taken up. So, no, there was supposedly money going for the purposes of getting a new building.
They always say, but I don't believe them.
And clearly, because I spoke with a family member recently, and I said, you know, have they ever moved out of that church? And she said, no, it's still in the same church. That's so funny. How do you have a building fund for 30 years?
That's building the reverend's bank account.
Exactly.
I think that's part of it is deception. Instead of just telling people this is for the maintenance of the building that we in, repairs.
That would just be a maintenance fund.
Yeah, I think so. That's what she said, that, but they don't tell people that.
Don't you get that at the offering? It's like, you know what? I don't know how to run that. I'm just saying that it's just too ironic that, you know, they can just do that kind of stuff.
Tell us how that works out.
Okay. Pass the plate.
Go fix it up. Now, how exactly do they work that again? How much goes to the pastor's girlfriend apartment fund, the hush money fund for all of the male prostitutes? How much?
Are you implying
settlement for all the child molestation cases. Got to have money for all that stuff, you know.
I am flabbergasted.
What?
I cannot believe you. Let me give this information before y'all get too deep into the bitter hour.
Oh, okay.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/AK Beyond the Book. We're currently reading Amos Wilson's Falsification of African Consciousness. Go get the book. It's on Amazon. It's all over. And the next book after this is going to be The Slave Narratives, right?
Yes, The Slave Narratives is published by the one I have is published by Library of America. It's an anthology of about 8 or 9 different slave narratives. The first one we're going to probably start with is Harry A. Jacobs.
All right, so we're going to start with that, so you can go ahead, because I know you're going to get the book, so this should give you enough time to go ahead and get that, because actually Amos Wilson's book is not that long, so we won't be in it for many more weeks.
About a couple more weeks, that's it. We're going to be out of it, and we know, yeah, we're going to be due. So y'all better move along.
And next week, we'll be back to 10 o'clock, the book club meeting. We'll be back at 10 p.m. from 10 to 10:45. All right. And, okay, so back to your bitterment, and then we can go.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was funny that you was flabbergasted because that's what the Reverend was doing with that male prostitute.
See? I mean, you need to get under somebody because, see...
That's what the Reverend was doing.
There you go. See, I set that up for you. Ba-dum-ba-dum.
Take my wife.
I knew you weren't going to miss that. Oh, rim shot. No, stop it.
No, it's like a lot of these. I mean, I remember when this white pastor got caught. You remember that guy that... I forget what that white dude was doing. He was a famous for something. And he got caught. He didn't get caught. What it was, his homo thuggery lover ratted him out.
Is thuggery a word?
It is now.
Okay.
It ratted him out because of, I can't remember why he wanted more money.
I remember that guy. Wasn't he a politician or something?
He was
a congressman or something.
He was kind of involved in some big movement. I'm about to dig that story back up because I remember that guy was all on TV for something.
Yeah.
And then it came out that he was on crystal meth.
Right, yeah. The his lover spilled all the beans.
Spilled all the beans, man. And it was interesting because I'm like, you know, I'm totally convinced that that's a prerequisite for pastorship in a big church, at least a church that if you're considered important. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
you know these things happen. You know a lot, and I was in college and I needed
every time we got to hear college stories.
My scholarship, and it was. Never mind.
I know. Some people say, you know, everybody don't have it made and have they tuition paid for by scholarships. Some people have to go sit on some creepy old man's lap.
Right. And what comes, see, that's, if they always tell it. That's what I don't understand. A lot of them come up missing, but they always tell it.
Yeah.
They can never keep quiet.
Never. Right, so...
Anyway, you remember the black guy, the black preacher in Houston, they caught him red-handed. It was really a big deal, and all of his parishioners were telling the media and stuff to leave him alone. He's just a man. Leave him alone. We forgive him.
It'd be back in, like, 99.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. Was before 2000, yeah.
Did you have to forgive and forget?
Yeah. That was back in 99.
Technically, you know what? They do it for the white man. So you know what, I'm gonna give them kudos for even extending that type of benevolence to another black person.
That's right. That's what
yeah, but see that black person, where I see it is in support of white supremacy.
Right, so he got it. Well, all right. So, anyway, thank you for ruining that.
He master approved, so.
Was trying to help him out there.
Oh, yeah. I think he was trying to help him out there. No, I didn't.
But I forgot, this is the bitter hour.
This is the bitter hour, so. Oh, he doing some white supremacy, black folks will pretty much take it for the team. They'll take it. They'll take any amount, but you.
Any amount of what?
Oh, crap.
Oh, okay.
Thinking, yeah. Oh, yeah, but I didn't catch that joke coming. That was a good one. I'm really thinking of things. I was trying to ask them to do something positive, like to fast for a day. They'll be acting like I was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you want to rape one of my children? They'll be like, you know, will that do? Can I eat? You know?
Right.
Oh, I don't want to rape your kids. I was just saying we can all meditate and pray together and agree on a particular thing. And they wouldn't do it.
Because you're in a cult.
Oh, yeah, you're in a cult if you're doing that. But if you're getting sodomized, that's totally normal.
And forgivable.
What?
And forgivable. That's what he just said. Did you hear what he mean just said?
Yes, he said and forgivable.
This is what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the warped thinking that is pervasive, that is ubiquitous throughout the black community. That kind of thing is, that makes sense to them people.
I want to know, how did you make the word sodomize so funny?
Oh, because I don't know.
That is so wrong.
Yeah, they want to. That's all right. Oh, you know, want to sodomize somebody? Oh, yeah, it happens from time to time. You know, a little sodomizing is just, you just got to get around to that one day. You know? No, you don't.
That's a rites of passage in our community.
They preach. Oh, they ain't get your boot. Oh, you think you too good, huh?
Sodomy.
Oh, yeah. Once you go to church camp again this summer, kids tell me they don't want to go back to church camp. No, you going to church camp. No, Daddy, we church camp is scary. No, you don't you ever say nothing about the Lord is in church camp, really? The Lord is in church camp? No, he's not. The devil is in church camp.
I didn't see him nowhere around.
Bitter hour is turning into therapy hour.
I saw Satan. Let me tell you, I didn't go to camp.
There you go.
I'm telling you, I know somebody that went to camp, and they came back, and they wasn't the same way they was when they went to camp.
I knew this story was coming. See what I'm saying?
And
I knew as soon as you said church camp.
And they went to camp. And my dad like, "Hey, you want to go to camp?" So I started shaking my head real fast. Uh-uh. I want to go to camp.
You know, I went to camp, and it wasn't that bad.
Twice.
They cut my scholarship, right? And,
Oh, shit.
Tell you, man, they start doing strange things. Never knew them to be doing. It's like, what are these new interests you have?
In boys.
In boys.
And you know something, like, I find strange? You know a scholarship they cut that I had? The Knight of Negro College Fund.
Oh, man.
They cut my scholarship and suggested I do this movie. All in the same day.
Oh, damn.
If you have some troubling about your childhood that you'd like to share, please dial in 623
Therapy Hour
805707. Did they get those numbers transposed? You know the damn numbers.
You have to laugh to keep from crying.
And some of y'all on the damn phone line, so just hit one. I'm trying to tell you.
You know, all of these. I'm gonna have to cut all of this.
You probably will.
You can't be sitting around making jokes about sodomy, child abuse, molestation, and stuff.
You can't.
Mm-mm.
Who said that?
X-rated porn, homosexual movies, and things.
Nobody said anything about porn, homosexual movies, and X-rated.
Crazy ass man said we had to make a movie.
Oh, he said, okay.
He said he had to
Oh, yeah, they made the movie, yeah.
He got his scholarship the same day.
Same day, okay. Yeah, that's right.
Can't make jokes about that. That's just not funny.
It's inappropriate. It's not funny, but it's the...
Inappropriate.
I didn't know that kind of thing was frowned on.
Yes, it is frowned upon. You can't make jokes like that. Serious. All right.
If your church or any leadership person touched you inappropriately, please hit one.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it. I think that's it. And I don't think this is the way to top off Amos's work.
Right.
It's serious work.
All this is going to be edited out. We're just on here, you know what I'm saying, just kidding. It would not. We already wrapped it up. We're going to edit this segment out.
Right.
I always do. If you listen to the old shows, I'm sure you don't ever listen to the old ones. But parts don't make the cut.
All right.
Well, blooper reel. All right. Well, anyway.
It's been real.
We'll come back next week. We're still in part two of this lecture. And we'll pick back up on page 86 on the politics of diagnosis.
All righty.
And that should give us. We should wrap up the rest of this the rest of this part in on next week, or not. So it'll be about 2 or 3 weeks, and that'll be it for this book. So join us again. Next week for Wild West, we feature Dr. Amoson Wilson, The Falsification of African Conscience, subtitle, The Eurocentric History of Psychiatry and the Politics of White Supremacy. And we're in the part two of the lecture entitled Eurocentric Political Dogmatism, Relationship to Mental Health Diagnoses of African People. All right, we'll see you next week.
All right, peace.
Peace.